She might have been a drummer, or even played the tuba instead of a flute. She's Sherry Winston, musician, composer, and businesswoman. She even handles all of her own bookings, negotiating, and managing her own band. I'm Fred Macy, and this is The Jazz Scene, dedicated to the preservation, promotion, and appreciation of jazz, America's classical music. Sherry Winston is one of the most successful jazz flutists, or flautists, or flute players that you never heard of. And maybe that's because most of her bookings are corporate events. She says that club dates just don't pay enough. So she took her talents in a different direction and now has a client base including Chase Manhattan Bank, Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, and several Fortune 500 companies. While her musical credits range from Stevie Wonder and Kenny G to no fewer than two, count them, two, command performances in front of two different presidents at the White House. Her roots are jazz, and her attitude is straight ahead. When I caught up with her, Sherry was a lady who knew where she'd been and exactly where she was going.
Sherry Winston has a very unusual beginning playing the flute. I understand in junior high school there was a choice to be made.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, they had no other choice except to line us up alphabetically. And my last name being Winston, of course, I was at the end of the list. So by the time they got to me, I had a choice of tuba or flute. And to be honest with you, I had a very good idea what a tuba was, but no idea what a flute was. So I said, well, I know what the tuba is, and I think that's a little too big for me, so whatever the flute is, I'll take that. And that's kind of how I got started. I really wanted to play the drums, being a tomboy at that age, 11 years old. And unfortunately, all the boys that were in line ahead of me took the drums, so those were the two instruments left.
I believe you're about 5'1".
You've got a good eye. That's it exactly.
You'd look kind of strange with a tuba.
I don't think I'd get very far professionally with a tuba either.
Have to play it from the inside.
Right.
That kind of a thing. You say you would like to play the drums. Do you have any regrets about that?
Not really. As a matter of fact, I lived out a lot of fantasies in my adult life. I always wanted to be a gymnast and never had the opportunity as a child. We didn't have those opportunities in my neighborhood, so at a very late age, I started taking gymnastics and became very frustrated because I would ask the teacher, why can't I do a back walkover? Why can't I walk on the beam? And he said, okay, smarty pants. And he said, I'm going to catch you, and I want you to try to go backwards. And the old bones just wouldn't make it. So that was one interesting thing in my life that I tried to relive. And I think the drums I tried to relive by taking conga lessons with a guy by the name of Montego Joe, very excellent player. And at the end of literally beating on the drums, the conga drums, for about an hour, the tips of my fingers were just throbbing. And then I tried to play the flute, and my fingers were swollen and whatnot. And I found not only did I not like the feelings that my hand had afterwards, I really didn't have any kind of feel for the drums. I think you're either a natural talent there or you're not. And I really didn't want to put in the amount of work that it would take for me to become an experienced drummer.
You said you were a tomboy. You're quite a sportswoman. You do, from what I understand, windsurfing and scuba diving and swimming and horseback riding and what else?
Well, I'm also a competitive skier, and I do long-distance swimming several times a week. I do Nautilus and workout. So, I don't know, and looking back at my life, maybe I still am a tomboy. It's hard to tell how they judge women these days.
In terms of your music, you knew Roberta Flack when she, in fact, was primarily a pianist.
I knew Roberta before she was, quote-unquote, Miss Roberta Flack. And this goes back to Washington, D.C., very early in my career. Actually, I had not started a professional career at that time. And one of my pianists sort of had a temper tantrum on me. He said he wanted to play a certain amount of tunes, or he called off certain tunes that he felt we should play. And in our repertoire, I was not that comfortable playing those particular songs on that particular night. So I said, well, Leon, if you don't mind, can we play? And I named two or three other songs. And he insisted on having his way that night. And I said, look, I'm going to get up there, I'm going to do a bad job, so I'd rather not do that. So he stormed out of the place. He refused to play for me. And being a young woman at the time, I stood there fighting back the tears. I didn't want to cry and embarrass myself, but it was my time to go on, and these people are waiting for me to come on stage, and my pianist walks out. So a woman comes over to me, and she puts her hand on my shoulder, and she said, "Can I help you? What's wrong? You look like you're in distress." And I explained to her what had happened. And she said, "Well, are you ready to go on?" And I said, "Yes." She said, "Well, let's go." I said, "What do you mean, let's go?" She said, "Well, I'm going to play piano for you. Name the songs that you want to play." And I named three songs. Name the keys. I named the keys. She says, "Fine, let's go." I had no idea who she was. She did not introduce herself to me. She sat down at the piano and played the most incredible introduction to these songs that I've ever heard in my life. She played better, needless to say, than my pianist did.
Thank heavens for bad tempers.
And she was just marvelous. I mean, we had a meetings of mine. The music was great. She played the songs like we had been playing them all of our lives together. So it was really very interesting. We started a long-term relationship there where she actually started working with me. I was at Howard University at the time.
And that was Roberta.
It was indeed Roberta Flack. And we started doing little shows together as a duo. And she was teaching school in Washington, D.C. in the school system. So she was glad to get out and let people hear her. And at some point during the show, after several tours, I insisted to the promoter that she get her own spot and be allowed to play and sing piano because I knew what an incredible talent she was. And around the same point in history, she was also working at Mr. Henry's, which became her launching point in Washington. And she started drawing crowds in there soon after our concerts together around the block. I mean, it was just phenomenal what was happening with her.
Roberta got you hooked up with Quincy Jones, though, didn't she?
She sure did.
And there's a funny story, I understand, about the first time you auditioned for Quincy. Would you share that with
us? How did you hear about that?
I have my sources.
That was really one of the most horrible moments in my life, or I should say one of the most fearful times, because Roberta had asked Quincy as a favor to allow me to perform with him. She figured this would be a good turning point in my career. So she warned me, though, that Quincy had said ahead of time, "Look, if this girl is not up to snuff and if she's not good, she's going to get kicked out of rehearsal. I can't have someone who's mediocre playing in my group." So I went out and I bought every Quincy Jones album that I could find. I diligently put them on and tried to learn all the material. I learned them in what I thought were the original keys. So I felt very confident. I got to rehearsal. I'm ready to go. I look at the music for the first time. Oh my God, everything is in the wrong key. Little did I know that my machine was playing slower than what the music was.
Your record player that you were listening to
was slower. It was not playing true. So I had learned every piece of music in the wrong key. And for anyone who knows music, if you're a half a step or a step off, it can be devastating. And he pointed to me, it was time for me to take a solo. I absolutely did the best I could.
In the wrong key?
No, I wasn't. I just read the music.
You had made the transition then?
I had to. I could not play it in the wrong key. So I tried to relearn everything and just...
Instantly?
Well, thank God I had classical training and I can read. So... I tried to do the best I could, and needless to say, after the rehearsal was over, I went back to my hotel room and tried to, you know, relearn everything and feel a little comfortable with it, and it went really very well.
You are also, in addition to being a very very fine flautist, a businesswoman, for want of a better way of putting it. You're the director of jazz publicity for CBS Records.
Right.
How do you handle that and balance your musical career with that and find any time to relax?
Well, relaxation at this point in my life is kind of out, unfortunately. I am feeling the pressure and the stress of it, and I just kind of made a vow to myself that this is what I wanted to do. I've been trying to have a career for a long time, a professional career. I've always played with my own band since I graduated from college, and I have always had to have one job or another, and I've kind of worked my way up over the last 11 years in the record industry.
You seem to prefer, of course, the musical side. Are you kind of treading water with the other thing right now, or do you want to continue in business?
Well, I think that it's very important for musicians to have a firm understanding of the music industry. I don't think too many do. I find that with a lot of musicians, they don't understand the importance of marketing, of sales, of picking the proper tunes that will get a lot of exposure on different types of radio stations. And for me, having 11 years in the industry, even though it is stressful, I think that it's very helpful and it makes me a wiser musician.
Sherry Winston, I'd like to get your kind of flash reactions to a couple of things. Just whatever pops into your head first. When I say women's libbers.
I think they're great and I think they're necessary. And I personally feel that I'm a women's libber.
In what way?
Well, I want to stand up for my rights. I will not take a back seat to a man. I will speak my mind and be honest and be as true to myself as possible and not lay back in any way, shape, or form and really demand the respect that I think women deserve.
People who don't keep their promises
are really hurting themselves more than anybody else because in the morning, I think if you don't keep your promises, it's pretty hard to look yourself in the mirror and feel good about yourself. And I think the beginning of love of any kind starts from within. And if you don't feel good about yourself, you can't love anyone else.
Junk food.
I hate junk food. I'm part of my life, you know, being so stressful, I try to be very careful about what I eat, what I put into my system, my exercise program. So I have to really hold myself back when I see people going into some of the fast food places. I won't mention them because it's not good to do that. But it's like, God, what are you doing to your body? Why are you doing that? You know, so many people are feeling kind of down and droopy and whatnot. And I think diet has a lot to do with that.
What about when I just say Sherry Winston?
Oh, a woman that needs to cool out a little bit. And take some more time for fun and enjoyment.
Yeah, don't we all? What bugs you the most?
I don't know if I can talk about that on the air. I would say just probably homeless people, people that are hungry around the world, the unfairness of Americans having so much when there are people starving here within our own country. When I pick up the newspaper and I read about people in the Sudan that are starving, and because of politics and whatever reasons, we cannot get food to them, and because of natural causes like rain and whatnot, where the trucks are not going to be able to get through. So I guess things that bother me are things that I can't control or really help in any kind of substantial way.
On the bright side, if you could do or have anything that you wanted to take your fantasy and make it come true. One wish. Just one. And it cannot be a wish for three more or something. I mean, just...
I think to be sitting in a gorgeous home with picture windows totally surrounding the entire house, overlooking a cliff in Kauai, in Hawaii, and just kind of being left alone and being able to write and to do my music and to be able to travel the world and let people hear my music. That would be my dream.
Sherry, if you keep going the way you're going, I got a funny feeling you're going to get there.
I hope so.
Thanks an awful lot for talking with me.
Thanks so much for having me, Fred.
As a performer, Sherry has more than half a dozen top-selling CDs, has been featured in several of the hottest magazines, performed on many of TV's most popular shows, and opened for the likes of Gerald Albright, Ramsey Lewis, Chaka Khan, Peebo Bryson, Diane Reeves, Ronnie Laws, and a host of other premier performers. To continue a bit of name-dropping, on the business side, Sherry has worked as Director of Jazz Promotion at Columbia Records, Arista, GRP, and Elektra Records, promoting such well-known artists as, ready? Kenny G, Grover Washington Jr., Wynton and Branford Marsalis, Harry Connick Jr., Nancy Wilson, and Ramsey Lewis, to name only a few. As a lady, she remains self-directed, vibrant, and one of the most well-rounded musicians I've ever met. Please accept my sincerest thanks for joining us here at the Mark of Jazz. And I hope you've enjoyed sharing some time with Sherry Winston as much as I did. If you'd like to hear something special or want to talk about what it is that you like best, just leave me a comment either here at the Jazz Scene or on the website itself, markofjazz.com. Until next we meet, let me remind you of some profound advice once offered by Mr. Miles Davis himself, who said, "Don't play what's there, play what's not there."